Okay, market review. We are close to where we will probably end up the year. We've got 16 more days to go, and my guess is they're going to try and lock in at about where we are, but of course, anything can happen. US dollar index down 9% for the year. The exporters love it. If tax reform gets passed and they start to repatriate the cash, the dollar could head higher. Fixed income, the long treasury now at 9.82%. The intermediate treasury almost at 3. The bond aggregate ETF at 3.62%. Junk traded off a little bit at 5.92%. The S&P now crossing 20%. It's up 20.5% for the year. Home builders outperforming the overall economy 27.58%. The European ETF, VGK, up 24.52%. Germany up 26.63%. Germany continues to outperform Europe. And then developed markets minus North America, 23.25%. The large cap, China, 33%. Small cap at 31%, and the emerging markets at 32%. So it looks like China and the emerging markets are going to close in together. Commodities still down for the year. The commodity index down 4.31%. I continue to ask the question, is the bottom in on commodities? Because I think inflation is going to if inflation is looking up over the floorboards here, and that may be good news for the emerging markets, particularly with the dollar down. Gold now up 8.5%. It's dropped off a little bit. Silver down 0.6, about a half a percent for the year. Oil out way out of the doghouse it was in, but it's still down for the year, down 3.63%. What this is all saying is securities continue to not only outperform GNP, but outperform by a lot. And you can't have that happen without serious damage to the overall economy. And we just have too much of a sucking sound into the securities market relative to the general economy. And that's part of what's created this win-lose relationship between corporations and everyone else. And unfortunately, too much of it is being rigged and engineered through government. Prime Minister May is having a hard time on Brexit. So lost the vote in Parliament and then went to the Brexit summit and is getting along better with the European leaders than she is with her home team. The problem that Theresa May, I believe, faces on Brexit is a population can be ready to go along with the concept, but when it comes to supporting all the particulars and the real economics, oh, that's way too difficult. And of course, the people who are never for the concept in the first part are going to drag your feet. And if the guys who voted the majority for the concept are not willing to support you on the particulars and the real economics, it doesn't take but a few people to then drag you down where it's becoming impossible to get things done. And this very situation is plaguing the American people as well as Theresa May trying to get to Brexit. If you look at the deal the Brits have made, it's a much pricier price tag than I think they figured that they would have to pay. So they've gotten beaten up and beaten down is what it looks like. But May is continuing to just turtle and try and get that deal. Well, another more bad news on more fake news. The Zions have taken control of Fox. Rupert Murdoch made a deal with 20th Century Fox to sell the entertainment businesses at 21st Century Fox to Disney for $66 billion, which means this Fox is going to be, you kind of wonder what's going to happen to Hannity and Tucker Carlson if they have to toe the, oh, Russia did it line of, the Disney properties. And to make matters much, much worse, the FCC rescinded the net neutrality rules and legal battles now loom. You're turning over way too much power between this and other decisions over to cables and telecoms who are absolutely not trustworthy. If you think the private market, as Jerome Kersey said, could, solve the problem by providing alternatives, I think we're run the danger of real serious censorship imposed by private guys, and you're allowing way too much of an infrastructure that's been financed with taxpayers' money to be used to basically allow allow private companies to extract rent in a way that's a serious drag on the economy. I think this is very bad news, and I'm not a fan of this at all, but I think this battle is only going to continue. Of course, we see Russia come out and say it's going to create an internet for the BRICS, and frankly, you know, the first thought I thought is, how do I create an offshore subsidiary and get on it? Because I'm concerned about what's going to happen in the United States over this. And but I think the fight is far from over, and we're into trench warfare now, particularly if we start to see tremendous censorship or rent extraction by some of the big cable and telecom monopolies. Okay, tax reform is still not a done deal. The committees reconciled, and they thought they had an agreement, but the Senate Republicans are facing tightening majorities. They have their majority is 52-48, which means they pretty much need every Republican. Now you have Mario Rubio holding out for child tax credit and making all sorts of noises. I think part of it is because the latest polls show 61% of Americans not supporting tax reform. Both John McCain and Thad Cochran of Mississippi are absent, supposedly on health issues. I'm suspicious. And Corker of Tennessee said he will not support. So Corker takes it down to 51-48. And that means between McCain, Cochran, and Rubio, you can't afford to lose more than one. And that's potentially three. The votes next week, the Senate's going to break on the December 22nd, so they have to get it done. Given what happened in Alabama with the Republican loss there, which will put them at 51-49 when they come back, I think they're pushing very hard to get something accomplished. There have been a fair amount of sort of minor changes going on, and so I won't go over it until they pass the bill next week or until it becomes law, but it looks like churches and not-for-profits will be able to endorse candidates without jeopardizing their tax-exempt status, which is going to make 2018 a very interesting election, on top of the fact that they're laundering all sorts of money to people using Bitcoin. So we have an army of activists and troublemakers. And then the taxation of tuition waivers is now out. So that's very good news for a fair number of graduate students who are depending on that tuition. Bitcoin, in some of the interviews I've done in recent weeks, I've talked a fair amount about Bitcoin and why I call it an op. If you listen to our Solera report on Bitcoin, I strongly recommend that, both for a discussion of sort of an overview of Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies and what's important and what you need to know. But also, in the process of doing due diligence, I really did a lot to sort out the best links to help you understand the technology, how it works, you know, what's important, and sort of industry overview of cryptocurrency. So there's a lot of tremendously good information that took sort of a couple hundred hours for me and my allies to sort out. Anyway, part of building out a more liquid market for Bitcoin is having futures. Investors can hedge their positions instead of having to realize gains, which is going to make the market certainly more open for institutional investment. So we see the futures coming out, and I would anticipate that that's going to bring out more institutional support for Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies, but it certainly expresses institutional that would not be happening unless top-down they wanted Bitcoin to continue to succeed. The price has exploded over the last week. We hit almost 18,000 last week. 17,589 was the high. And now it's dropped to, last time I looked this afternoon, was 16,532. But it started the year at 1,000, so it's up 16 times. And of course, that is generating tremendous interest for people desperate for capital gains of any kind. Anyway, you'll see, I've started to call it the Bitcoin flu. People who are very completely excited about their first big profits, and of course interpreting that to mean many different things other than they got big profits. I've seen it many times before, and you add to that significant entrainment when they're ignorant of entrainment, and very, in some cases, very high testosterone, and you've got a very bad combination of people who are often running in the bubble and not seeing the bigger picture. And part of the problem with that is you really get, somebody made a very wise comment talking about what a special culture there was around Bitcoin. And you had this great culture of volunteerism and gifting. And it's true. I think there is a great culture that's grown up around Bitcoin and some of the cryptocurrencies. And that's part of the danger because you get what I call your morphogenic field and your culture and your networks all completely intertwined with something that is an op. And the next thing you know, that op is pulling the strings and making crazy with your field, with your culture, with your network, with your friends in a way that's much, much more destructive than just financially destructive. I saw people during the internet bubble just get absolutely destroyed emotionally, physically, mentally, financially. Their whole world was blown up because their world was entangled in what had turned out to be an op. And so there's a lot of wonderful stuff going on, and that's why it's essential to see the bigger picture on it and manage it accordingly. You can't let someone pump and dump your field. I sometimes talk about one person who I tried to talk out of the Dinar scam for many, many years. And finally, after 7 years of not being able to talk them out of it, I sat down and I said, okay, look, I just want you to estimate how many hours over the last 7 years you spent managing your dinar position, anticipating your dinar windfall profits. We went through and calculated it was 7,000 hours. That's 1,000 hours a year. 7,000 hours spent managing their dinar fraud. And I said, you know, if you had spent that 7,000 years, you know, investing in your children and other children in your family, imagine where you would be today. Or going out and getting a job and spending, you know, 7,000 hours doing something unbelievably productive that taught you new skills. But instead, you're sitting around just managing something that is really just an op, and you've lost 7,000 hours to an op. Now, I lost, you know, what's 11 years times 3,000 a year, 3,000 hours a year. You know, I lost $30,000 to an op, or 30,000 hours to an op when I litigated with the Department of Justice and HUD. So, but I chose to, you know, I knew what I was in for, and I chose to fight. And I would, you know, if I had to do it all over again, I would do it again. So, sometimes we have to give time to an op, but please, you know, if you do know that that's what you're doing, and just, you know, I want you to surf this thing if you participate, not get run over it. And that includes not getting a control file. So we had a wonderful new law firm in California write a report on cryptocurrency taxation. It's a special report for subscribers. You can just do a search for taxation on the Salera report. You'll pull it up. And it's very important you understand what the compliance requirements are for cryptocurrencies or Bitcoin and make sure you're compliant because the last thing we want to see you do is get your, first, don't get your field and culture pumped, but don't let anyone create a control file on you as a result. Make sure you're compliant with taxes and other compliance reports. Anyway, my position on all these things is I try and keep the ops out of my time as much as possible. It's one of the reasons I get so frustrated when you guys ask me to comment on hope porn or fear porn. I just, you know, those are various kinds of disinformation. If you're a new subscriber, you might, I think we might have fear porn or hope porn in the core concepts, but a couple times Rapoporn, I've done Salera reports to talk about these things. Anyway, I want to put my investment in things that I think are real and add real productive value to the overall economy, and are, you know, whether they're productive for investors or the overall economy. One of the things I'm working on, we'll announce next year, is screen. I'm working on screens with a money manager. We're doing a screen for, it's called Soleri Space and one for Soleri World. And I love working on those things because I love finding great companies run by great people doing great things. And they're real and they're important. Okay, and I really have gotten an allergy to ops. Now I said that, and one exception is I'm very interested in whether or not we can use initial coin offerings as a way to get around the regulation on IPOs. The SEC has made a lot of announcements of no, you can't, but I'm curious to learn more about what can be done offshore, and that's sort of on my next list to look into. California fires, please don't buy the official story. If we're going to bring back major capacity and insource a lot of manufacturing into the U.S., then San Francisco and L.A. both need a way to expand significant corporate capacity, and they're both, if you look at a map, the place to do that is to go north. It's very interesting to see the fires are very unusual, and of course, just happen to be happening in the places where expansion would be logical. But we're going to have to see what will happen before we can really know what has happened. I'm going to be discussing the issue of the fires around the country much more with Dr. Farrell for the annual wrap-up. As I said, Roy Moore lost in Alabama. It was very close. God knows what dirty tricks went on in the voting machines. If you look at Moore and Bannon, I don't think they had the capacity to play games with the votes as much as the other side did. If you look at who they were up against, it was definitely a bipartisan coalition. I'm surprised Moore did as well as he did. The Republicans continue to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. We're seeing so much of that on both the Republican and Democrat side. Certainly the Democrats really snatched defeat from the jaws of victory by allowing Clinton to be the nominee. What fools they were. But so now the Senate is at a 51-49. And if you look at all the other mistakes that both sides are making, I think the 2018 election is going to be quite something. But if you look at the grassroots organizing by the Democrats, it's amazing and ferocious. And I think the Democrats are really going to come into the election ready to be much stronger than they've been in a long time. So we'll have to see what happens. But the Republicans have been certainly snatching defeat from the jaws of victory, and there was no excuse for them not to put up a candidate that they would support and then make sure that candidate won in Alabama. It was a terrible performance. The sex and political purges roll on. Peggy Noonan had a great column on Al Franken's resignation, and she talked about the importance of retaining standards, and it sounds just like me. Let me just read her last paragraphs. Christians are called to live in faith, hope, and charity. She's referring to an author, Mr. Armami, urges them not to let fear drive them to tie their fate to insufficient and inadequate leaders. It is sound, if hard, advice. Don't let your fears, even wholly legitimate ones, drive you. Hold on, have faith, retain standards. In the short run, this can be difficult. In the long run, it's the only way to win. Hear, hear. I couldn't agree more. One of the things Noonan points out in her next editorial or essay is this is serious. We have to start being really serious about how we look and sound as a people in a country. If you look at things from the point of view of people abroad, we look totally ridiculous. There have been lots of headlines over the last 2 weeks about Mueller and FBI and DOJ corruption, both in the campaign and then how they handled the transition. And I assure you, it's the tip of the iceberg. Mueller's in a bad place given that the Clinton-Russian collusion looks much worse than anything that could, I mean, essentially, there's no, from everything I know, there's no collusion whatsoever between Russians and Trump, other than Trump obviously doing business with the Russians and some pretty shady Russian characters in New York before he ever campaigned for president, which most New York re developers and my. You know, my impression is that most New York developers did because that money was pouring in. And you can thank the U.S. intelligence agencies for that. If you look at the Secretary of Defense, the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, and now White House staff, all three are Marine generals. It's one of the reasons I say these days we need to pray for the Marines because they're the. Along with Tillerson, I would say those are the real adults in the administration. And what Noonan is saying and what I'm feeling reminds me very much of a wonderful poem from Rumi, which goes, "Sit down and be quiet. You are drunk, and this is the edge of the roof." The United States is trying to make a very big turn in policy, and I would say the adults in the room are not enough. And so it's time for all of us to. to either help the adults in the room or try and be adults in the room. There have been several court decisions. I haven't had a chance to investigate them thoroughly. One was Whole Foods had closed 365 locations, and a judge ruled that they had to reopen them. And then there was a Starbucks decision where Starbucks was closing stores, and the judge ruled they could afford to keep them open even though they were losing money. These court decisions look terrifying to me. There's some real fundamental property issues there. I want to take a look. But if you're in real estate, I would check them out and make sure you understand what is going on there and what that debate is about, because it's as more and more real estate gets re-engineered for the changes in online distribution of goods and services, if judges take the position that stores have to stay open even if they lose money, then we're really headed into Atlas Shrugged. One of the things I did this week is I got a very, very eloquent description from one of my subscribers about how the crowd in Las Vegas had really not reacted quickly enough to the shooting and what was happening. It was almost as though they froze or couldn't fathom that this was really happening and what to do. And it reminded me of two books that I've recommended in the past. One of my favorite is Lawrence Gonzalez's book, Deep Survival. It was, I think, several years in the last wrap-up. It's been recommended as one of the top books for the next year, and I can't recommend it to you highly enough. It's about people who face extreme wilderness experiences and who lives and who dies and why. And there's a series of lessons of what you do to succeed in a difficult spot. And those lessons apply not just to wilderness experiences, but to life itself. There's another book that I reviewed on the website, and it will probably be in the books, the best books recommended for 2018 in the annual wrap-up we publish in January. It's called The Unthinkable, Who Survives When Disaster Strikes and Why. It's by Amanda Ripley, beautifully written book, and along with Deep Survival, it does a great job of helping you understand how people behave in disasters, whether it's plane crashes, tornadoes, floods, fires, bombings, and what we can learn so that when disaster strikes, if it strikes, we are much better at responding. And very enjoyable book, but also from a practical standpoint, very, very useful. These are the kind of books that can save your life. Doctor's death. We see two deaths in New York of doctors stabbed to death. One is an apartment, one in Cornell. They're both working on cancer research with stem cells at the Cornell Hospital. And it's pretty frightening to me, because generally when you see assassinations of people, of course it was ruled a suicide. It's ridiculous, not a suicide at all. When you see situations like this, these kinds of assassinations are made to look like accidents or made to look natural. And a real effort was made here to make it clear. I mean, this is a pretty gruesome way to die. A doctor's in his apartment with his 11-year-old daughter. His wife is out playing tennis, and his daughter finds him bleeding to death from a knife attack. So, this is kind of brutal, and you wonder what the story is. There was an implication in one article that this was a Clinton Foundation issue related to Haiti, because the doctor had been an early volunteer to Haiti and had written a long email about how inadequate the response was. But my guess is, if you look at the kind of research they were doing, this is, healing cancer and killing the financial gravy train for the pharmaceuticals and hospitals that is cancer, is something that has traditionally been a very dangerous thing to do.